Hello, this is an installment in the podcast series from Spirits, Gods, and Ghosts of East Asia. I'm William Saris, your host, and with me today is Caitlin Johnson, Christina Stoller, and Seeley Wu to discuss dragons and snakes, East Asian folklore, and beyond. Beginning with Seeley, could you each introduce yourselves?
Hello, I'm Seeley Wu, and I'm a history major.
Hi, my name is Caitlin. I'm also a history major at Center.
Hi, I'm Christina Stoller. I'm a psychology major here at Center College.
And I'm an anthro major here. So today we're going to be talking about how Japanese and Chinese folk tales show differentiation between snakes and dragons, as well as similar traits, and how they can often be linked to qualities associated with the different sexes, and through that the idea of yin and yang. We will look at historical context and tales to analyze the relationship between dragons and snakes and their cultural importance. So to begin with, could you each just describe what you'll be contributing to the podcast today?
Sure. Because I'm native in China, so I can provide some Chinese classical texts with respect to the snakes and dragon and in the fields of gender, sexuality, water, and yin yang.
And then in conversation with Seeley, I'll be giving more of a Japanese context of snakes and dragons and their associations with Shintoism and water.
And I will be discussing gender, sexuality, and power as they are represented in the symbols of dragons and snakes within Japanese and Chinese folklore. We'll be discussing some tales from Japanese folklore, and historical context will be provided by Seeley.
To introduce this topic fully, though, I'm going to begin by giving some historical background from a not-so-East Asian source. So I would first like to begin by discussing the Naga of India. Although the Naga are not explicitly dragons in their own right, they were likened to Chinese dragons and incorporated into Chinese lore. This likely aided by the fact that both the Indian Naga and the Chinese dragons bore a similar serpentine shape. Both were seen as immensely powerful, and both held importance with water. One example of the Naga that can be directly linked between India and East Asia is the Hachidai Ryu, who are 8 dragon kings associated with Buddhism. They were originally 8 Naga kings, or Rajas, and in Mahayana Buddhism, they ended up following the Buddha. These 8 dragon kings in Buddhist thought are acknowledged to have originated as 8 separate beings of Indian lore. However, in modern times, they are seen as being one greatly powerful deity. Now to begin looking at dragons and snakes of East Asia. Seeley will be addressing their history and impact in China and how they function in lore. Seeley?
Thank you. The snake and dragon have a much closer relationship than most people think in Chinese culture. First, from the semantic aspect of understanding dragon and snake, snake are used to describe dragon in Chinese texts. An interesting explanation in the classical text Shuowenjiezi, which translates to English is explaining the subtlety of Chinese characters, contains an annotation of the word for long, which is dragon in English. Annotation reads, Long, Ling Chong Zhi Chang, Chun Fen Er Deng Tian, Qiu Ze Qian Yuan. The first few words here says, dragon is in the form of snake, and also the length of snake. And the rest of the phrase describes the behavior of snake and said, dragon goes into the sky in spring and dives into the water in autumn. And because, as you see, Chinese people do not know what a dragon looks like, since it is basically an imaginary animal, they want to describe dragons, so they use the appearance and behavior of snake to describe them, which means dragon and snake are closely related from this level.
So you've mentioned some areas where linguistically they can be seen as similar concepts to dragons and snakes. Are there any historical examples of how they're referred to in a similar way?
Actually, there is some more further relationship between snakes and dragon. Snake seems to have some noble traits that dragon have, according to some Chinese texts. In a historic record in Song Dynasty, there is a phrase reads, San Huang She Shen, which translates into English is, the 3 ancestral emperors in China is in the form of snakes. And since dragon is closely related to power, and snake was quoted as an emperor by ancient historian, it further proves the close relationship between the two.
So you've talked about the language a lot. Is there anything in the writing system that shows a similarity between the dragons?
Yeah, there is. And as you know, Chinese characters are hieroglyphic, which means the shape of the character always indicates the meaning of the character. And when you look into the character for dragon long, you'll find it is combined with several curves, which resemble the squirming motion of snakes. Especially when looking to the earliest Chinese character, the oracle Chinese character of dragon, and you can see it exactly resembles the snake, except the top head of the character.
Now, having discussed the Chinese influence, Caitlin, could we now move into discussing Japan and what that folklore means?
Sure. I think it's very fascinating that close connection between snakes and dragons in Chinese folklore. And similarly to China, snakes also belong to a larger category, which in Japan is called mushi, which includes amphibians and insects, as well as snakes and dragons. But besides belonging to the same category, snakes and dragons do share a close connection, much like in China. They are sometimes so related that one creature may later transform into the other, or they can share close relationships. There are stories of snakes transforming into dragons, and others where dragons have snakes as their subjects. But especially within Japanese folklore, there is more of a distinction between the two in comparison to China. Notably that dragons occupy a higher level of nobility, while snakes are more associated with common life and the feelings that go along with that.
Christine and Celie will talk later in regards to the difference between the two, but before that, could you tell us a little more about Japanese interpretations of these two creatures?
Sure. Although Japanese interpretations of snakes and dragons may come in part from Indian and Chinese influences, as you have mentioned earlier, these creatures also play an important role within Shintoism, which is a distinctly Japanese religion. As one historian has argued, Shintoism is the religion of the Japanese people from the very beginning down to the present day. Within this religion, there is an abundance of snake-like deities and kamis, which are worship spirits. And many Japanese deities, both Shinto and Buddhist, are related to water. Many of these water deities happen to be in the form of snakes or dragons. With dragons specifically, they are often thought of as the energy of the water cycle, which means they are involved with starting from a body of water, whether it's a river, sea, then vapor, and then rain again. And many of these dragons will reside within bodies of water. So an example of this close connection between dragons and water could be seen in one of the tales within Will Tyler's Japanese Tales. In this story, there's a drought, and the emperor turns to a monk who's a close friend with the dragon, who lives within a body of water. And the emperor demands that the dragon bring them rain. Although the dragon says it does not govern the rain, he's able to produce it, but with dire consequences for himself, ending up with his dismembered body floating in a pond. So this connection between dragons and water can often lead to rain rituals involving dragons.
So Celie, is there any instance of dragons being associated with water in Chinese folklore?
There is, especially in ancient time when people lacked the scientific knowledge of making rains. So in some years where there is a lack of water or lack of rain, they will hold rituals and ceremonies to pray for rain. And the object they prayed for is the Dragon King. And people will show a great amount of respect to Dragon King in these rituals and ceremonies. People will forbid cigarettes and alcohol before holding the ritual, and even the emperor himself will kneel down before the altar of the Dragon King. These are all signs of showing great respect, and therefore, on this level, dragons are the divine charge and god for the water. And even in some fairy tales, the adult will tell their children that the drizzle is caused by the sneeze by the Dragon King.
Having discussed dragons and water, I'm now thinking about snakes and water. So what connection do snakes have with water, if any?
Sure. Within the Japanese interpretation, snakes as well are especially related to water. And one of the things that comes up often when looking at this association is the fact that there are many snake deities who can control the weather or bring rain. So like dragons, these serpents are thought to live within bodies of water and are referred to as wardens of their ponds. And their connection to water is further evidenced by the fact that many will worship snake deities not only at shrines but also by these areas of water, throwing in their offerings directly into the ponds or deep river pools.
Celia, can you talk to us a little bit about how emperors are shown with dragon-like characteristics?
Sure. Well, the power and dragons are very closely related in Chinese culture, especially dragons are like, it is an exclusive symbol for the emperors. There's many examples. The most famous ones may be in the famous long novel, The Romance of Three Kingdoms. The first emperor, Liu Bei, in this novel had his follower design a petition which had them said that they dreamed of yellow dragons, and which is universally acknowledged as a sign for an emperor's is coming. So Liu Bei used this little trick to help his ascendancy to emperor more legitimate, because everyone believed that the appearance of a dragon, even it appears in a dream, is the coming of emperor.
Okay, so people are using dragons to kind of legitimize their throne and their power. We also see like a lot of imperial imagery in combination with dragons in literature and art throughout Chinese and Japanese culture. And then within Royal Tyler's Japanese Tales, we find a lot of these dragon kings and these dragon figures that have big palaces either in caves or underwater, and that are made of jade and have gold and jewels and kind of hold some kind of power over the humans that need things from them. So, for example, Japanese tale number 184, called Gold from the Dragon Palace, is basically about a poor man who saves a small water snake who turns out to be the daughter of that local dragon king. And to thank him properly, the daughter takes this man down into the pond, to the bottom of the pond where the Dragon King's palace is, so that he can be thanked properly. And the poor man observes that this is a magnificent place of beauty and power, and everything's carved from jade and there's gold everywhere. And to thank him, he even receives a gift of gold from the Dragon King. Another example of this is Japanese tale number 183, which shows a Dragon King and his palace, but this time within a cave. So it's not always necessarily in bodies of water, but often very closely associated with that. And we've talked a lot about dragons and their association with water earlier in the podcast. But we always see these as detailed with magnificent jewels and things that you would think of with kings and emperors.
Yeah, there is not many folklore that in China mentions the dragon, because, as I just said, the dragon stand is an exclusive symbol for the emperor, so no, like, normal people want to use the dragon to signify their power because
the fear of offending.
They fear because they will disrespect the emperor, disrespect the symbol for the emperor.
And of course, I just have to jump in and say this links back to my favorite of the myths, the Hachidairu, in terms of literally translating into eight great dragon kings. You know, it just kind of shows how pervasive this idea is throughout culture and myth, with this association between dragons and power, or dragons and kingship.
And we also see associations of dragons and gender as far as being masculine symbols, which comes into play in the Chinese yin and yang. The yang is masculine and is often symbolized by dragons.
Yeah, there's definitely exact correspondence between yin and yang and female and male. And like in historic records, in one of the Confucian books, which is Chunqiu Ji Shi, says, Fuxi Shi Fen Tian Di Ding Yin Yang. And the Fuxi here is the very ancestral god of Chinese people, and Fen Tian Di Ding Yin Yang here is mean the ancestral gods makes the heaven and earth and the man and woman. So the yin yang here correspond exactly to female and male.
Very interesting. Now I would like to kind of start talking about snakes in Japanese and Chinese lore and history, and how snakes, especially in Japan, have become a symbol of sexuality and lust and are often associated with the female gender. So snakes are more often and more likely to be associated with the idea of desire, lust, and sexuality, more so than you would ever see a dragon being associated with that kind of thing, despite their physical similarities and how similar they can be shown in China. But in Japan, this distinction is very clear. Examples of this can be found in Japanese tale number 112. It's called Lovesick. It's about a girl who becomes so sick with desire for this boy that her parents arrange a marriage for them, and the boy ignores her, brokenhearted. She dies, of course, and her ashes are sent away. Meanwhile, the boy that she loved becomes very ill and goes mad, and he is seen often conversing with a giant snake. And he eventually does die, and in his coffin he's found wrapped in this snake, and it is later told that the girl's bones and her ashes also turned into snakes. Celie, are there reasons that you can see in East Asian history as to why women are often portrayed this way, like associated with snakes, why the sins of lust may be mainly attributed to females and snakes?
Yeah, in Chinese culture, snakes are always depicted as a symbol of lust as related to women, because there is a phrase in Chinese says 蛇性本淫, which translates to English is the nature of snake is lustful. Chinese people portray snake this way mainly because the snake mates from spring to winter and mate frequently, and they think snakes is a symbol of lust. And there is a story in Chinese culture that is Bai Shi Le Zhuan, the white snake tales, in which a monk tries every way to kill a snake which transforms into the shape of a pretty woman and falls in love with a young man, because the monk thinks the white snake is a lustful creature and tries to pull the man down into an immoral position.
Okay, so this is kind of saying that in China especially, and in Japanese history, like, the snake is almost used as like a warning symbol, because women, they assume that like it's a woman's natural urge to be outwardly lustful or sexual, and this is frowned upon, and so women mm-hmm. would want to be very submissive and quiet and almost hidden from society.
Yeah, in both Japanese and Chinese culture, they adopt and apply Confucianism, which asks women to follow the rule of 三从四德, in which 三从 means women should be obedient to their father before their marriage, and be obedient to their husband after marriage, and be obedient to son after their husband's death. And you can see the Asian women are always in the position of obedience and never have chance to express their free will, and let alone their strong desire. And it is rather easy for women, Asian women, to cross the line of their supposedly demureness from a modern viewpoint. So that is the reason why they become the target of being warned.
And in addition to this Confucianist factor, I just wanted to reiterate the fact that Buddhism also played a large role in both Chinese and Japanese societies. And so, interestingly, Buddhism also warns of a woman's predisposition for lust. As any strong attachment to this world, including love or lusting for something, goes against Buddhist teachings, there is the Buddhist influence warning that being lustful can impede one's goals of attaining Buddhahood and could cause that person to be reincarnated as a beast or oftentimes as a snake.
And we can see this kind of idea in Japanese tales number 138, what the snake had in mind. And this tale talks of a young woman who, because she is so overwhelmed with jealousy and lust for another woman, she is turned into a snake as punishment. And when she's able to hear the teachings of Buddha, her sins are redeemed and she's able to transform back into a woman.
Yeah, I think this comes back to the confusion thing. Like, women are not supposed to be jealous and to express any very strong emotion, because they're just not woman behavior in the context of Confucianism.
So the two of you talked a lot about how, I guess, snakes are a very feminine figure, but are there any cases where snakes are not necessarily feminine, or are there any masculine snakes?
From what I've read within the Japanese tales, I find that any time that a snake is not displayed as being outwardly female in gender, it's usually not referred to in any form of gender within the tales. And if it does come in and appear as a male, it's usually because when a female is looking at the snake, they see this like image of a young, handsome man because that is the outward visualization of their lust, and that is what they see what they're lusting after, and so the snake itself will take that form. But other than that, you usually see either non-gendered or specifically female aspects to the snake. Along with what the snake has with desire, this doesn't always mean sexual desire. Sometimes desire in this way can be shown to be attached to just human desire for objects or other things, not necessarily sexual desire. So in the tale, Japanese tale number 139, Red Plum Blossoms, you have a young girl who devotes her time and her life to caring for this red plum blossom tree, and she loves these blossoms and collects them. And so when she becomes very ill and dies, it is said that her only sin in life was loving her plum blossoms too much, and so she's unable to let go of this love and to let go of her plum blossoms, so she's reincarnated as a small snake in her next life, and the small snake spends the entirety of its life wrapped around this plum blossom tree. So this is an example of not only sexual desire, but also desire of earthly things. So when you die, you're supposed to be letting these things go, and she was turned into a snake because she was unable to let go of her earthly love and possessions. There are more malevolent representations of females in combination with snakes within the Japanese yokai. Yokai are Japanese monsters or creatures of the unknown that can be extremely dangerous to the human world. The Nurai Ona is a particular example of an evil yokai. She is the head of a woman in the body of a snake. She lures in humans with her snake body disguised, and once she reveals herself, the unlucky person will probably not live to tell the tale. This is a monster that may have developed out of the negative representations of women and their role in society, or what happens to a woman who has been cast off for displaying extreme jealousy or lust.
Meanwhile, if dragons are ever perceived in a negative way, of course it's coming from a position of great power and godlike energy anyways. So, you know, it might be negative, but how bad can it be if you're a god?
True. Dragons themselves, if they're ever shown to be not necessarily evil, but certainly doing harm to humans, it's definitely not seen on the same plane as if a snake-type creature was doing harm to humans, because it's said it's kind of the right of the dragon to be able to do that and kind of exert their power over the humans because they are a god to them.
So now that we have discussed these topics in detail, just a quick recap. It's been Caitlin and Seeley discussing similarities, how they're viewed, how snakes and dragons can be viewed in a similar way in China, and how they're associated together in Japan through concepts of water and Shintoism. Then moving over to Christina and Seeley's conversation, focusing more on differences, particularly in Japan, with dragons being more associated with power and power roles, and snakes being associated with themes of lust and femininity. To wrap up, I'd like to discuss how we talk about dragons and snakes today in culture. Beginning with a childhood favorite, I would like to discuss Shenlong. Shenlong appears in the manga form of Dragon Ball Z. His name is then later changed to Shenron for the anime. Shenlong I like a lot because he's actually originally from Chinese myth. He's then shifted to use for Japanese anime. Originally known for being the bringer of rain and thunderstorms and an immensely powerful dragon god, his power has been moved to kind of reduce this very common theme of water with dragons, as we have discussed, and now simply maintains this godlike status in the world of Dragon Ball Z. He is capable of granting any wish someone could have, being if that they can complete a task. And I particularly like in this scenario the fact that it's a Chinese dragon being used in Japanese television, because it almost seems reminiscent of the cultural exchange that China and Japan have seen in the past, as we've already discussed in this podcast. I'm curious to hear what comes to mind when each of you think about this now.
For me, I would say another example of dragons within pop culture would be in the Ghibli Studios movie Spirited Away, which has the dragon Haku, and this portrayal of dragons kind of shows the still existing connection between these creatures and water. Within this movie specifically, the dragon has a close connection with the Kohaku River, And whenever that river is destroyed, the spirit also loses a part of himself. So this representation of dragons within modern times can still be seen as something related to water.
And it seems to me that the most interesting part is the change of symbolizing meaning of dragon in China. As we discussed above, dragon has been taken as a deity and godlike creature in both Chinese and Japanese cultures. Especially in ancient China, dragon is an exclusive sign for the mighty power owner, the emperors. But nowadays in many places of China, like in Sichuan and Tibet, many people claim to see real dragons flying in the cloud or the immense dead body of dragons stranding on the river bank from time to time, and they even take picture and take video of them. And many people, especially the old people, believe seeing a dragon is the luckiest thing in their life. So nowadays, the symbolizing meaning of dragon is no longer an exclusive sign for the power owner, but a good omen for everybody, for every normal people.
An interpretation of snakes that I find very interesting within Western culture would be the story of Adam and Eve, in which a serpent is the creature that actually deceives Eve into eating fruit from the forbidden tree, which then allows Eve and then eventually Adam to think of things such as shame and evil, something that they previously were not able to do, which aligns very well with the Japanese idea of snakes and that they represent lust and evil, which could also come into play with shame, especially when considering women displaying those types of emotions and feelings.
Well, thanks for those comments. Of course, these are just a few examples of East Asian culture seen in modern times. The stories are a testament to how dragon and snake lore remain relevant in East Asia and also captivate audiences around the world. This has been Dragons and Snakes East Asian Beyond. We hope you enjoyed the program, and thank you for listening.